4 and begin right there towards the end of the chapter. Are you ready for the first text we'd like to look at in our lesson here this morning? I guess we haven't turned the classes out since we have, I can just go ahead and make my opening remarks here. I am very thankful for the invitation to come. I have looked forward to being here. I visited this church back in 96 when Joe had just first gotten here, when you were meeting in the Grange Hall. It's been so long ago that I can't really remember much of anything except that Joe was here by himself at that time. And I can't remember much of anything. I can't remember much of anything anyhow. But it is good to be here. I'm very thankful to be working with Joe, not knowing you, but I recognize that you have a man like Joe working for you, and I think that says a lot for you. Joe and I have worked together, as Joe just said, in 4 different countries. We've just really done a lot of things and have a lot of memories that we have together, and I'm just so thankful to be here. I hope that our time together here will be something beneficial, and I hope also that if there's something that you want me to say extra, and you've got the lessons, but if something needs to be addressed, well, let me know about that, and I'll be glad to do that. And if there's anything that I would say that you think needs to be corrected, again, we say that so often, but let's do that. Let's listen with an eye to eternity, recognizing the words that come from God's Word are the things that are important. The speaker is not so important. What's important there is just that he speak as the oracles of God. Now, as we get into our lesson, I try to have a family lesson in my meetings, and this is the one for that. And in Ephesians, the 4th chapter, in verse 26, Paul says, "Be angry and sin not. Let not the sun go down on your wrath." Now, anger is a normal emotion that we experience throughout our lives. Paul's goal here in writing what he writes here in Ephesians 4 is not to eliminate anger, but he's trying to teach people the proper control, proper use of anger, and the control of anger. Some little children will perhaps show most clearly the need for controlling anger, and within the confines of the home or perhaps the comfortable boundaries of the family, they'll feel free to vent sometimes, or really let things out, and you know, of course, the parents have to make sure they try to bring that out of the child. But sinful public anger has really become a problem among adults in our society, and we've become used to that without even thinking about it. You think of road rage. You think of the number of sporting events that are interrupted when two players get in a fight, and the benches, they talk about a bench-clearing brawl, and it's because anger is not being controlled. In the light of this, we're not surprised that anger would manifest itself in more private places, such as the home. Some people in the confines of the home will regularly drink themselves into a stupor. Others will look at pornography on their computers or in magazines and things like that, while keeping up a real clear and clean image outside the home. Still others will produce illegal drugs within the home, which they either use themselves or use themselves and sell. Likewise, within the confines and comfortable boundaries of the home and the family, anger is sometimes more freely expressed than it is otherwise. There are men who will be bitter and biting to their wife and their children. And then when they step outside of the house and they see their neighbor, "Hey, how are you doing, Fred? Good to see you today." You know, all of a sudden, everything's just changed and rosy. Terms common in our society show how much a problem anger is in the home. You think of the terms spouse abuse, child abuse, divorce for emotional or physical abuse. Now, with all these things in mind, what we're looking at today is anger in the home. I first preached this sermon years ago in Germany, where I was in the habit there of preaching on the home once a month. And of all the sermons I did on the home, this is, I thought I had more responses on. Now, I don't know if that's because in a military community where you have the people are, some of the men are more, you know, they're in that kind of a, how would you say, more aggressive and perhaps having a little bit more stress and things like that. I don't know if that's so. But anyways, I just thought, well, since this seemed to be so needed according to some, I'll just go ahead and use this more often. Now, Ephesians 4 in verse 26, what Paul says there, applies in the home and out of the home. Unrestrained anger is going to lead to sin. And if our doctors in their medical field, the research is what they tell us is so, that anger also contributes to a number of health problems as well. In light of this, it will be helpful for us to study here anger in the home. Now, it will first be, before we get into our study, it will be first helpful if we would look at the right use of anger. And that is the use of anger to cause fear of wrongdoing. You know, sometimes parents can be angry in the home, or a spouse can be angry in the home, and later feel the necessity to apologize when really there's no necessity to apologize, because sometimes there's a reason for anger. You think of with regards to God, that in Proverbs 1 and verse 7, the fear of the Lord is the beginning of knowledge, but fools despise wisdom and instruction. Sometimes it's good to try to bring people to a fear of God, and sometimes that means we're going to have to say something to them, you know, maybe rebuke them or do something rather strange, or perhaps the face might get a little red. What did you think you were doing that? That's not wrong. That such is to the saving of the person's soul. And with regards to government, you think of Romans the 13th chapter in verse 1, beginning in verse 1. Let every soul be subject to the governing authorities, for there is no authority except from God, and the authorities that exist are appointed by God. Therefore, whosoever resists the authority resists the ordinance of God, and those who resist will bring judgment on themselves. For rulers are not a terror to good works, but to evil. Do you want to be unafraid of the authority? Do what is good, and you will have praise from the same. For he is God's minister to you for good. But if you do evil, be afraid, for he does not bear the sword in vain. For he is God's minister, an avenger to execute wrath on him who practices evil. You know, we have a problem in our country, and I feel in other countries as well, where officers of law are not supposed to show any anger. Sometimes it is right to show anger. There is a reason for that. It is as long as it's used in its proper place and it's restrained. There's a reason for getting angry and calling someone down who's in a danger to the public. What about with regards to parents? You think of this verse here where it says, "Furthermore, we have human fathers who corrected us, and we paid them respect," or we gave them reverence, as some versions say. I think of this childhood friend I had, every once in a while. I grew up during the baby boom, and there was just lots of children around, and we'd be bunches of us doing things together in the neighborhood. There might be 7-8 people doing something, and we did something one time we really shouldn't have done, and we knew our parents were going to find out. And I remember my one little friend saying to his brother, saying, Greg, Mom's going to kill us. She's going to kill us. And, you know, I think they went through many killings in their lives. And they weren't any worse for it. And while they were not Christians, it says something for the older brother that, you know, it seemed to me that he had some, benefit from that. He later, I remember in the 90s, hearing a name when we were, or the late 90s and 2000, we were in Alabama for a couple of years, hearing on the radio, because I knew this guy had gone into the Marines, and I'd hear, Marine Colonel Greg Goodman said today, and I'm thinking, did Greg become a colonel in the Marines? And you'd hear every once about Greg Goodman, and his parents spanking him. And disciplining him, no doubt disciplined him in terms of being a helpful agent to helping our country. Now, besides these things we've looked at, and talking about the proper use of anger, one might show anger in a just or righteous cause. And you think of Jesus clearing the temple. A spouse might show angry, to their mate because of some sin that the mate is guilty of. There's nothing wrong with this. The aims of this kind of anger, the proper use of anger, is the restraint and the rebuke of evildoers, to correct, to reform, to cause one to reverence and honor the words of authority, so that the words of God and the words of the lawful authorities and the words of parents, that these are respected. It puts some start, some kick behind those words that are spoken, that are lawful authorities, the authorities that God recognizes and that we should recognize. And we look at these things and we think, well, yeah, there are some things that are helpful. But we're looking here, we talk about anger in the home, we're talking about Bible cases of sinful anger. And let's look at some cases of sinful anger in the home. First of all, with angry men. It says in Colossians 3 in verse 19, husbands, love your wives and do not be bitter towards them. That word bitter. Bitter, to embitter, exasperate, i.e. render angry, indignant, passive, to be embittered, irritated. Bitterness and ill temper. We're going to the English since we have the word bitter there in the Greek. We go to the English. An ill-tempered and offensive disposition. Bitter, hostile, nasty. As you think of these things, you think of a lot of men will be bitter and nasty towards their wives. People say, well, you know, familiarity breeds contempt. No. Uncharitable familiarity breeds contempt. The idea that my wife might say the same thing from time to time or make the same observation, who doesn't do that about things? Well, isn't that the nicest thing that ever was or something? You say that all the time. Mary and I talked about this one man we were on vacation with one time, and he was just a very exuberant man, and just everything he ate, it was, boy, this is the best one of these I ever had. And you appreciated that. It might have been a little bit exaggerated, but we smile about that. You think of anger in children, or anger at children. King Saul, during the time when he's going down in his conduct and his relationship with David, then Saul's anger was aroused. This is when Jonathan is trying to talk to Saul about his treatment of David. Then Saul's anger was aroused against Jonathan and said to him, "You son of a perverse, rebellious woman, do I not know that you have chosen the son of Jesse to your own shame and to the shame of your mother's nakedness? For as long as the son of Jesse lives on the earth, you shall not be established, nor your kingdom. Now therefore, send and bring him to me, for he shall surely die." And Jonathan answered Saul, his father, and said, "Why should he be killed? What has he done?" Then Saul cast a spear at him to kill him, by which Jonathan knew that it was determined by his father to kill David. So Jonathan arose from the table in fierce anger and ate no food the second day of the month, for he was grieved for David because his father had treated him shamefully. Now, as you think of the sins of Saul here, and you think about the the relationship of father and son, that you have things that Saul did in anger here. He insults Jonathan. He so says those things about his mother, which is very, very, you think, in any case, wrong. But to say that to your own son, tries to make Jonathan feel ashamed when he is acting righteously. Jonathan is trying to do that which is right in speaking for good or speaking good about David. And yet Saul would make his own son feel ashamed of doing that which is right. And then he tries to influence Jonathan by appealing to greed. He's saying, well, you ought to be thinking about your own self. You're not going to be a king. You're not going to succeed me on the throne as long as David's alive. And then he speaks in direct disobedience to the law of God when he says that he shall be killed, where Jonathan says, why, what evil has he done? Jonathan's questions there are material because and they're important because you think of as king, as the reigning monarch over Israel, if a person is to be killed, there should be a just reason for him to be killed. And then he refused to listen to the voice of reason. And finally, he resorts to physical violence. You look at these things. How often do parents conduct themselves in a manner similar today? Now, the question is for us, how many times do we conduct ourselves like that? Or people who we can have some influence over conduct themselves like that in their homes, in the confines of the family, or perhaps in our presence? In Ephesians 6 and verse 4, where Paul said that you fathers provoke not your children to wrath, but bring them up in the nurture admonition of the Lord. You think of Jonathan's reaction there in verse 34, where he's very angry. Now, how often does that happen? Now, men are generally the power figures in the home. And as such, they can just let go with all their frustration, vent their exasperation, loose their wrath on those who they are supposed to love. Now, when you think of that here's the ones who are should be the dearest to them, and that husbands and fathers could act like this, are things that really need close examination in light of the Scriptures and repentance if guilt is found. But the thing is that the men are not always the power figure in the home. As you think of angry women, in Proverbs 21 and verse 9, better to dwell on the corner of a housetop than in a house shared with a contentious woman. Now you find in, what is it, 1 Samuel, verse chapter 9, verse 25, that when Samuel is talking to Saul about making him king, they go up on top of a housetop to speak. It would be a place where you could go perhaps and have some time alone with someone. Also, we read in Joshua's second chapter in verse 6 where sometimes grains and things like that, produce, were dried on the top of the housetop. But beyond this, the housetop also exposed a person to any kind of weather that happened to come by. It didn't matter. It doesn't matter, you know, what kind of weather it is. If you're up on the housetop, you're going to experience that weather. And the writer here is saying that it's better to dwell in the corner of a housetop, up there exposed to all the elements. Again, in Proverbs 21, in verse 19, better to dwell in the wilderness than with a contentious and angry woman. And you think about that. The point is, it's better to be exposed to all the elements of nature and all the discomfort that would be than to be exposed to such a woman. All the winds and the storms that a person might experience are more endurable than the tempest within the home. Now, a man must not divorce his wife. He must live together with his wife as the Scriptures teach. But what we're talking about here is a man having to escape the presence of his wife. I don't know the situation with this man and his wife, but I knew that he was not the easiest man in terms of just his bluntness and willingness to do anything. But I would learn from his wife is still back home in Florida, but he's over there in Alabama here for a few weeks or something like that. And you think, boy, they sure seem to spend a lot of time apart. And in spite of the love a man might have for his wife, the wife can make things so bitter that he would rather be away from her. He has to flee from her. He has to have some time of peace, some time of relaxation. A friend of mine's mother would just yell at him at the top of her lungs. It was one of those things where she would scream so loud that you felt like your ears were ringing after she got done. There are women who can speak things. Now, I know of this, that women who can speak things, and I'm not talking about Mary, that people leave the house right away. It's just so unpleasant that they just, without saying anything, just leave the house. That the angry woman makes the home intolerable. We use the term vexing. As someone has said, a woman who has a temper she cannot control usually has a husband she can control. And we say that I wear the pants, but she has the belt. You know, you hear those kind of things. And those are funny sometimes. We laugh about that and might tease our wives and just good humor about that kind of stuff. And there's nothing wrong with that. But there's some real applications of those things. And then what about anger in children? You think of the first children we read of in Genesis 4 and verse 1. Now Adam knew Eve, his wife, and she conceived and bore Cain and said, I have acquired a man from the Lord. Then she bore again, this time his brother Abel. Now Abel was a keeper of sheep, but Cain was a tiller of the ground. And in the process of time it came to pass that Cain brought an offering of fruit of the ground to the Lord. Abel also brought of the firstborn of his flock and of their fat. And the Lord respected Abel and his offering. We remember back there in Hebrews 11 there about verse 4 that by faith Abel offered his offering. That Abel brought this, that the Lord respected Abel and his offering, but he did not respect Cain and his offering. And Cain was very angry and his countenance fell. So the Lord said to Cain, why are you angry? And why has your countenance fallen? If you do well, will you not be accepted? And if you do not do well, sin lies at the door, and its desire is for you, but you shall rule. But you should rule over it. Now Cain talked with Abel his brother, and it came to pass when they were in the field that Cain rose up against Abel his brother and killed him. You fathers, provoke not your children to wrath, but bring them up in the nurture and admonition of the Lord. That children need to have that. Children need to teach their parent. Children need to be taught the proper use of anger. That there's nothing wrong. There's nothing wrong with anger. It's sinful anger we're talking about here. Also, we have to look at this. Parents have to look at this and ask the question: well, what might provoke sin? Might provoke sinful anger? It might provoke a child to wrath. And as we think about these things, wanting to get their own way, a child who's always angry, a lot of times a common source of anger is, well, I didn't get what I wanted. And of course the child needs to be trained to realize that doesn't always happen. The desire for attention, you know, sometimes a child just recognizes that, you know, this response, you know, seems to get some, has some play, so I'll just go ahead and scream out anytime I want some attention. That really, really works. You get angry that way. And temperament, you know, sometimes, you know, let's face it, everybody has different temptations. You know, different people have different things that will, you know, you. I think all of us, perhaps growing up, we had a child, a young man in our neighborhood who just always, his just whole life seemed to be telling whoppers. He just had one lie after another, and you know, oh, come on, you know, nobody believes this. And, you know, some people have that problem. Some people have a problem with anger. And cruel or unjust punishment. The child knows whether he's got it coming or not. You know, sometimes, let's face it, parents do have to mete out the punishment. Sometimes the father does that in anger, and the child gets a little bit more of a beating than he deserved. In the case of Jonathan, there, Jonathan rose from the table in fierce anger and ate no food the second day of the month, for he was grieved for David because his father had treated him shamefully. Notice there's the cruel or unjust punishment, not only to Jonathan, but also to David. And then showing partiality. We think of the children of Isaac and Rebekah. And Isaac loved Esau because he ate of his game, but Rebekah loved Jacob. And we saw how that played out there in chapter 27 of Genesis, where you find that finally, where Jacob finally secures the blessing from his father Isaac, and then shortly after Esau finds out about that, and as the latter part of the chapter shows that Esau, he consoled himself that when the days of his mourning of his father, apparently they thought his father was nearer death than he was, when the days of his mourning his father was over, he was going to kill Jacob. And you think of that. Parents can say, oh, well, I just like this child. Well, if you like that child more, if there's something that perhaps You know, perhaps the mother likes music and the child's a musician and the father likes sports and the boy's real good at sports. There's a temptation to like one more than the other, but you can't do that. You can't show the partiality. There has to be a care for even care for both of them. Never being satisfied with accomplishments. Why can't you be like your brother? Why can't you be like your sister? Why can't you be like the boy next door? The question is what abilities does your child have? And certainly trying to find the way to bring the best out of your child is a challenge to all parents in terms of all children being different, trying to monitor them and just keep after them and looking at them, you know, trying to just think, well, what is my child's capabilities here? But at the same time, if we're always, you know, finding fault with them and thinking, well, you're just never good enough, the child can do his best in the sight of God and the parent not be happy with it. Neglect. I think we've all heard that story about the little boy asking his parent, his father, how much do you make an hour? And he says, why do you want to know? He says, well, I'm trying to save up enough money to get an hour's worth of your time. The constant fault finding. The parent around the house can be a little bit too wrapped up in his or her own things, and the child's always in the way. That can provoke a child to anger. Bad examples. You think there in Proverbs, where it says there in verse 24 of chapter 22, make no friendship with an angry man, and with a furious man do not go. Why is that? Lest you learn his ways and set a snare for your soul. Now, parents can be guilty of being a bad example to their children. In fact, one source said, and this is not a biblical source, that in fact, marital discord is considered the primary familiar predictor of childhood behavior problems, which I thought was worth including. Now, we should furthermore monitor our children's choice of friends, what they watch on TV, the entertainment media. As I said, I grew up in the baby boom, and my parents were not Christians. My parents, I think, were, as far as worldly parents, you know, my dad was an agnostic at best. But as far as worldly parents go, I think that they were kind of really pretty far above average in how they tried to, you know, work with their children. But one of the mistakes they made, and all parents make mistakes, I'm not trying to fault my parents over much here, but was they did not watch the companions I ran around with. When I think of, you don't even like to talk about the things that were said and the things that were you saw, that, you know, there's, you run into all kinds of people, and if your parents don't say, don't run around with that boy, don't be around that boy, or who is that boy, find something about him, before they know it, their child is corrupted by their friends. Also that it's, you think about television or entertainment media. You think of, and I'm not a person who watches movies, and I don't really have much time for television anymore, but when I was growing up, you know, that we actually had we were just a middle class home, and just my dad was a middle class person, but we had a television room in the house. And the television was such a new invention, and boy, that was just something. And I can remember just times where the whole family, you know, the four children and the parents, there's just total silence, and all the focus is on the television. And one of the common themes on television was anger. One of the things that I got to thinking about, you see this in movies, I saw enough movies years ago to know this, you see a lot of movies and television shows, and they're all based on vengeance. And, you know, that something happens early in the show, you know, something takes place, and this person, you know, he's wrong clearly, and the whole show is taken up, or the whole movie is taken up by his, you know, finding this person and going around, you know, doing detective work or driving around asking, have you seen this person? Finally, in the last 2-3 minutes of the show or the movie, finally he finds him. Yeah, there he are. He comes and starts beating him and all this kind of stuff. And everybody's kind of happy for that. But we don't think about, you know, that's just saying, boy, I tell you what, if you got things built up within you, well, the best thing to do is just loose your anger and scream and beat the person and stuff like that. You know, there's enough of that stuff that children are seeing in society and here in society without having it piped into the home. And we think, oh, what a righteous cause that is. Well, yeah, but I mean, we can get enough righteousness from the Bible. We don't need the television to teach us righteousness. So as you think of the anger in children, it does not surprise observant person, because we see children throwing temper tantrums and in public areas from time to time, and anger in children needs to be recognized and it needs to be dealt with. The Bible does not leave us uninformed about the effects, the dangers, and the manifestations of sinful anger. All can profit from the teaching of the Bible on these things, including all members of all families. Now, it will be helpful if we will dwell for just a moment on the dangers of sinful anger. We've seen these things, and let's try to make an impression on it. So we don't, you know, sometimes people think, well, you know, I just a little problem, and he's you know, the man or woman, your brother or sister here in the congregation might be thinking, oh well, this is just one of those little problems I have. Now, wait just a second. Let's just look at these things. Let's look at some sins that can result from anger. We already looked at some. We'll review some here. That murder there in Genesis 4, the first murder. Or God's children, you know, they're the children of God's children, God's first man and woman, trying to make one feel ashamed for acting righteously. Jonathan's acting righteously, his own father. You know, you think today, you know, parents says, well, what if that thing was standing out there like that and you knew I wanted it, why didn't you steal it? The guy was dumb enough to leave it laying around. Trying to influence one by appealing to greed. You know, you're never going to be anything unless you do this or that. You're never going to get this, you're never going to get that. And those are things people need to look at. Speaking in direct disobedience of the law of God, as Saul did. Resorting to violence. Cutting off all contact with your spouse. You think of Ahasuerus there in the first chapter of Esther, where he's angry at Vashti because she will not come out, and of course it one of those things where there seemed to be some better contact between the husband and the wife there, the king and the queen, but he's angry and just cuts off all contact with her. She's not ever going to be seen again. There have been a better solution to that. You think in 2 Kings 5 and verse 12, where Naaman, you know, he's told to go dip seven times in the water of Jordan. And he says, are not Abana and Pharpar rivers of Damascus better than all the rivers of Israel? May I not dip in those and be clean? And he goes away in a wrath. You think of people refuse to do God's will. These are sins connected with some anger in the Bible as you look at it. Now, as you think about these things and you think about the things we've had before us, we look at the Bible. Let's just look at some further sins that we see coming from anger. What about strife? Now, the word strife is excessive quarreling or arguing. Is that something that's always happening in the home? Certainly, sometimes there's a discussion. There's sometimes a misunderstanding, and there's some that happens sometimes. I hope it doesn't happen y'all, but I mean that can happen. It doesn't happen to Mary and I, but that can happen. But you know, excessive. You know, just the strife is the idea where you've got something that's going on. There you go again. Person just waiting for a chance to leap in there and start it all over again, because people get to where they love strife because there's not good feelings towards their spouse. The impatience. Haven't you got that done yet? Come on. The lies. I'm never going there again. That's the last time we're going to your mother's house. I'm not going to do that. I know you did that before. Don't tell me that. And what happens? People get all worked up in anger, and suddenly they're starting to say things that they know they're not going to bring out, or not going to carry out, or they start to accuse things that really never happened. The unkindness. You think of the harsh words that follow anger. And a person, you know, thinks about or says there in Ephesians chapter 4 and 32, be kind one to another. And if they think of that verse, they have to shake their heads that time and think, oh, what have I done? The cursing, profanity. I know of a true account where a gospel preacher burst out. He wasn't a faithful gospel preacher, but burst out with foul language. And people get angry. They justify this. You see, anger doesn't walk alone. You think of trying to ruin someone's reputation. The idea of, well, that's the last time he's going to get from me. I remember this one time he did this. He probably meant this when he did that. I'm sure he did. They kind of go around and spread that around. Refusal to forgive. No, come on. Don't come ever say you're sorry. I'm hurt and I just don't want to hear that. Those things, hope they don't happen in our homes. Those are things that result from sinful anger. You look at hard-heartedness, the idea of just being stubborn. No, come on, it's been several weeks. I won't talk about this one. But look, we have to talk about this. You think about what you said. No, don't hear about it. Distancing ourselves better. You sleep in the couch tonight. I'm sleeping in the bed. Or if you're sleeping in that room, I'm sleeping in this room. This is your room now, and this is my room. Divisiveness. Withholding love from a loved one. Get your hands off me. Stay away. The false accusations. I know what you meant. Or I know what you were thinking there. Don't tell. I know what you were thinking. And, people become mind readers when they get angry. Neglect of the home. Broken homes. As you think about this, unrestrained anger is like alcohol. Once it is let into someone's life, other sins will follow it. And there's no doubt about that. Many people want to play down their anger. They want to say, it's just a little problem. Anger will not be overlooked in the judgment. There in Galatians 5 and verse 20, when it's talking about sins that a person can commit, it will not allow them to go to heaven. And among those things it lists is lies there in Galatians 5 and verse 20. Now hopefully what we've talked about here will make all people want to have better conduct, both to curb their anger and also to help others who give way to sinful anger. So let's suspend the last part of our lesson here in looking at avoiding sinful anger. Now everyone gets angry. Jesus got angry. We're talking here about sinful anger. Now, anger management seems to be relatively new in a lot of people's minds, and people think that, this is something that really society's finally got a handle on. The Bible gives clear and understandable effective solutions to sinful anger. You think of there in James 1 and verse 19, "So then, my beloved brethren, let every man be swift to hear, slow to speak, slow to wrath, for the wrath of man does not produce the righteousness of God." Now, swift to hear. Much anger results from what we think a person has said. Or we may think we know what they meant by saying it. When we think of the being swift to hear, we have to think, I can ask for clarification here. And also, when we think of swift to hear, is swift to consider. We hear and we stop and we consider, what was actually said. And there's one time where it says swift here, and there's two where it says slow. Swift to hear, that's the silent part of it. And slow to speak and slow to wrath, those are the outward showing of those things. Now, one of the things as you look at this, since we're supposed to be swift to hear, slow to speak, and slow to wrath, it says the wrath of man does not produce the righteousness of God. That should provoke me to recognize, if I'm wanting to be righteous in the sight of God, I'd better look at this verse and be careful. And I ought to make sure that to knowledge, that is, I say, I know about this. I know what that verse says. To knowledge, self-control. You're supposed to add to knowledge, self-control, and to self-control, perseverance. So that means the idea is that I know what those verses about anger say, be angry and sin not, and hear what we have there in James 1. I know what those things say, and then I practice self-control, and I persevere in that self-control. I don't kind of pat myself on the back one time, I didn't get angry this time, so I'm doing okay. I make that a practice of getting away from sinful anger. Anger is a passion, and control of it. When we talk about self-control, that is the control of it. Now think of the many areas in which self-control is needed to curb some passion of the body or of bodily appetite. The covetous person recognizes his sin before God. And also he sees the credit bills, sees the sin of stealing or something like that that's resulting from it. And the person recognizes, hey, you know, there's some problems there. This isn't good. The people who overeat will acknowledge their transgression and recognize the health problem. The lustful person is ashamed of his lack of self-control. Now, in all of these cases, non-Christians, they will look at these problems, at the sins that bring upon them, and a lot of them will think that, well, I just need to change. I can't go on with this covetousness, this we're just wanting everything, or the overeating, or the lusting, and things like this. Now, they decide to change just based on what they see happening in a social sense or a physical sense. One of the main sources and forces of change in a Christian's life should be the Word of God. Now, if the Christian is right, the Christian is going to let God guide them rather than their own appetites and passions. God said here, He said, be swift to hear, slow to speak, slow to wrath. To your knowledge, add self-control, and to self-control, perseverance. As we said there already, be angry and do not sin. Do not let the sun go down on your wrath. And as you think about these things, if we have a problem with sinful anger, we need to plant these verses in our heads. And we need to plant them in our heads to the point that we hear them. You think of what it says there in Hebrews, the 3rd chapter in verse 7, where he says, if any man today will hear his voice, or today if any man will hear his voice, and he's talking about the voices of the psalmist. He goes on to quote the psalmist. If any man will hear his voice, he's not talking about some miraculous voice of God from heaven. If any man will hear his voice, and see, one of the things we can do is memorize verses like this so that we're tempted to be angry. And this works. These things work. I haven't done this with anger, but I've done it with other things. And these things work. You just, all of a sudden you're tempted to do something, and you hear God speaking to you. Be angry and sin not. Do not let the sun go down in your wrath. Be swift to hear, slow to speak, slow to wrath. You know, that's God speaking to you. That's Him. It's Him talking to you. I think of things that my dad taught me. Sometimes I still hear the voice of my dad. We need to hear our Father in Heaven's voice the same way. Now let's think of some Bible helps in controlling anger. Proverbs 19:11. The discretion of a man makes him slow to anger, and it is his glory to pass over a transgression. 29:22. A wrathful man aboundeth in transgression. Remembering that should help us control anger. A wrathful man stirreth up contention. 15:18. Again, should help us. A fool uttereth all his anger. In Proverbs 29:11. He that is soon angry will deal foolishly. In Proverbs 14:17. Now all of these things, if I do these things, they will identify me as an angry person to people around me. And any Christian who sees me and knows me and knows the Scriptures, frequent anger is going to lead a person to be socially exiled from those who are good and wise. Because as we just saw a little while ago, in chapter 22 and 24 and 25 of Proverbs, have no company with an angry man. The person who's going to read that verse say, well, this person, I don't hang around with them. Anger leads one to be socially exiled for another reason. And that is the wounds that sinful anger causes. And we close with this little account that I pulled off the internet, which I think is worth looking at. There was once a little boy who had a bad temper. His father gave him a bag of nails and told him that every time he lost his temper, he must hammer a nail into the back of the fence. The first day, the boy had driven 37 nails into the fence. Over the next few weeks, as he learned to control his anger, the number of nails hammered daily gradually dwindled down. He discovered it was easier to hold his temper than to drive those nails into the fence. Finally, the day came when the boy didn't lose his temper at all. He told his father about it, and the father suggested that the boy now pull out one nail for each day that he was able to hold his temper. The days passed, and the young boy was finally able to tell his father
that all the nails were gone. The father took his son by the hand and led him to the fence. And he said, "You have done well, my son, but look at the holes in the fence. The fence will never be the same." When you say things in anger, they leave a scar just like this one. It does not matter how many times you say you're sorry or work to make things better, the wound is still there. Now, if you have an anger problem, do you always play down the effects of it? Is it just letting off a little steam, or just a minor eruption, just a little problem? Believe me, if you excuse sinful anger, you have no idea of the effects that sinful anger has on the people around you. And what about your state before God as you think of Him looking down upon you? As you look at our lesson here this morning, and we review our lesson, there's a proper use of anger to cause fear and wrongdoing. Bible cases of sinful anger in the home. Angry men, angry women, angry children. We've looked at those things. We've looked at some sins that can result from sinful anger. And as we look at those things, that ought to help us want to not be angry, to avoid sinful anger. Sinful anger is wrong. It is one of the major sources of problems in the home. It is also a major source of problems in our society. And there are many people who are in cemeteries because of sinful anger. There are many people who are in prison as a result of sinful anger. There are many homes and lives that are scarred as a result of sinful anger. There are a lot of churches that have been split because of sinful anger. Like so many things, anger often starts in the home. We end this lesson how we began it. Be angry and sin not, and let not the sun go down on your wrath. Let us all do the best we can, do all we can, to keep these verses in our minds so that we do not let sinful anger have a place in our lives. I thank you for your attention.